Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, and ground cloth. I was practicing.
And canvas.
Oh, canvas. Well, I was kind of counting.
And wires.
Counting all those in there. All right, fine. The twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, canvas, ground cloth, and wire. There we have it.
Wire.
Sure.
Stump work.
Okay. Oh, you're right.
Christine's doing stump work these days, yes. So, and that voice that you're hearing is Elizabeth Bozovich, editor, owner of Needlepoint Now, and all-around Needlepoint person. Hi, Elizabeth.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's taken over my life.
It'll happen, especially if you own and publish a magazine. Yeah, it'll take over your life. Yeah.
That's not a bad life, though.
No, I'm not complaining.
And fair warning, about halfway through this show, we are likely to hear four standard poodles barking because Elizabeth's...
Oh, you gave it away.
Oh, I was giving fair warning because it was a feature.
Oh, we were going to make it a surprise, but okay, so now we know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when Elizabeth's husband comes home, it'll be all kinds of excitement.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then we can have him join us and talk about needlework.
Yeah.
No?
Take the dogs home and feed them.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You have the studio out in the back 40. And, oh, that's right.
We're in Needlepoint Now studio tonight. I was working on layouts for the January-February issue.
Yes, that's right. I remember now. I was intensely jealous that you could walk out in the backyard and have another place to work. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so if I wanted to talk, speaking of the issues, we all should be in the next few, well, 2 weeks ago from when this actually airs, we will have received our November-December issue of the Needlepoint Now. And I have to say to you, I have really been enjoying the Judge's Corner, Connie Lynn Borserine. Is that how we say her name?
Yes.
Her pieces these last couple times on ways to improve your needlework. Really?
Yeah, she's a judge. She knows her stuff.
Yeah, but it's a kind of thing. I've just been pouring through them. Actually, I've read them multiple times. Because it's just the kind of thing I'm looking for is those little things that make a difference. That, you know, I can make a stitch, get the tension right, and all that, but what are the other little things that really can set your needlework apart? And she's been covering some of those. I really have enjoyed these two. I hope there's a part three. I don't know if there is. But
I just finished laying it out.
Good. Good. Because it's just because her thing in November, December on threads and the suggestion that you just get some doodle cloth and your threads and learn what the threads do, how they cover, how they don't cover, and just practice on cloth. I mean, we all know it's something you should do, but not everybody does it. And just understanding what threads do. I really am enjoying these little things because that's what interests me is the little finer points. And so, yay.
The detail is what makes good needlepoint. So, and I work in the margins on my canvas. If I have a painted canvas, I'll test out my thread and stitch in the margin because I'm lazy and I don't want to go get a doodle cloth.
I share your laziness. I can appreciate that.
Because it's so much effort to go get.
You know, you're in your stitching nest, you got your feet up. It is a lot of effort.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll start using the margins then and quit being so energetic. How's that?
Yeah. Save your calories for something better.
Yeah. All right. Good point. So I just wanted to point out, I really have enjoyed those because that's the kind of stuff I look for. And, so Connie's a judge, probably been around forever, seen a million things, good and bad then.
She was in charge of the judging program for NAN when I first started going through.
Oh.
And yeah, I think she's seen it all. She's an artist. She's a judge. She owns a shop. She's really a good person to have on the magazine.
Yeah. Well, that's actually is becoming the first place I go when I open that magazine. Right after I read your editorial, of course.
Of course.
I have to do two of those a month because I edit two magazines. That gets so old. Oh, geez. Yeah, coming up with ideas.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you make have an idea and jot it down, or you just try to remember it and then forget it when you really need it?
Well, I'm getting old enough that I have to jot it down. The memory isn't quite what it used to be.
Okay.
So yeah. I always have like a pad of paper with me, and I write down ideas when they come up through talking with other people. And yeah. It's usually my musings are usually what's rambling around in my brain at the time, and it's usually pretty. I don't know, just fluff information. What, you know, I've been out with my group and this is what we were talking about, sort of article.
Oh, you're lucky. I'm jealous because I write for two technical magazines. So I have to actually have something. Yeah.
You have to have facts, figures, and all that. I can just write what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. I couldn't do that. I'd be fired. I'd be fired in 30 seconds. Yeah. That wouldn't work. No.
Yeah, it's just going to be something bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I told you needlepoint is my life. I mean, that's really all that's going on in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, people don't want to read my bitter and cynical. I can guarantee you that. Mm-hmm. Nope. Nope. They do not. So, okay. So I'm curious, you know, last time we got to know what you do and how you do it and how the magazine works and so on and so forth. But you see and meet a lot of people, and you guys have your trip. I want to talk about your trip that you did and the tours that you have coming up. But I'm just curious what, in general, you're seeing with needlepoint, because we've talked to a lot of people since you were on last time, and kind of get a sense of what people are doing with needlework of all kinds. Where are you seeing needlepoint going? Are we looking at more painted, more charted, bigger projects, smaller projects? Are we seeing young? What are you seeing?
You know, we've done some surveys on our Facebook page asking, like, what's the average age of our audience? And it's between 45 and 60. So I don't think we're getting the younger crowd like we hope to. But then we all know Jenny Huff has a Facebook group called the, Needlework Up Millennials. And
yeah.
High school class. All doing needlework, and I really have to commend her for that. We're always trying to figure out ways to get younger people into it. Needlepoint isn't as cheap of a hobby as cross stitch, and also, you know, I think the way that we have to get to them is to offer some basic classes with reduced priced kits just to get them to try it, and mm-hmm. they may not jump off on it, you know, when they're 17 to 30, but when they get a little older and they have some disposable income and they're looking for a way to relax, they might, you know, remember, oh yeah, I took that class and I really enjoyed that. Maybe I'll try it again.
Yeah. That Jenny Huff story, that's one of the great ones. And she posted just the other day that, they're full up. They've had so much stuff donated. They don't have any more storage space, which is a really good sign, because that means those kids have a lot to choose from and can really find what interests them. But she made some comment about when the bell rings at lunch, and one of the best times of day is the kids come pouring in with their lunches to stitch. And you know, the fact that she got that going and has that enthusiasm is really, when you look at a hobby, yeah, that's mostly 50 and 60 year old people, to have all these kids excited about this is, I think it's fantastic what she's done.
Yeah. I hope some people are copying her, you know, the other teachers throughout the United States or the world are picking up from her lead.
Yeah. I hope so too. I know if I were teaching, I think we'd be doing that. That would be something. The male science teacher.
Yeah. Doing the lunchtime needlepoint class.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a math-minded thing. I mean, that's what Jenny
is. It is.
So she's just a real inspiration to me.
Yeah, she's we've not had her on, but you got to meet her at a seminar, I assume.
I got to meet her at a shop in California. She found out I was going to be there, and so she came over and we met one day. And then I got to spend some time with her at seminar, and you know, hopefully I'll run into her again soon.
Yeah, she's built a thing, and when she shows pictures of the kids, you can just the pride and excitement is in every one of their faces, and it's to me that's the best part. Yeah, they stitched something. Yeah, good for them. But it's just that they found a thing that they can accomplish and show, and you can just really see a sense of pride and excitement in every face. I think it's boys and girls too. I mean, it's not just a whole bunch of girls getting together. She's got a lot of boys involved too. It's just tremendous.
Well, what I love of the pictures is the kids are sitting together while they're stitching. So, you know, that they're socializing, they're talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great thing that needlepoint does for people. I mean, my group of stitchers, we'll talk about anything. We don't care. And we try to help each other solve their problems. You know, kids in high school today, it's not easy. It's rough. There's a lot of self-doubt and bullying and things like that. And if they have each other to talk through this while they're stitching, I think it's a very powerful form of therapy.
Yeah. Oh, that's no doubt.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely. I think so. I have a son who's in ninth grade, so he's right at that age too. And it seems to be a matter of kids finding their niche, right? Finding their group of people. And it's always something that unifies them. It's a class that they'll like, or a tendency, or a sport, or a hobby. And this is one of those things. So this could be the ticket to, you know, bringing a group of kids together to band together. And right. Then that's what they, you know, that's their group, you know?
Yeah. And my stitching group, we're like a family.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Do you gather together there at the studio on a regular basis?
There's seven of us, and we take turns having it at our houses or the studio. When it's here, it's always in the studio. And you bring your lunch, you bring your stitching. Whoever's hosting it will have some kind of dessert, whether they go to the store and buy a box of cookies or something, and we just sit, drink coffee or tea, lunchtime, take a break, eat our lunch, have a dessert, and then keep on stitching till about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. So we do it from 10 till 3 is our window. Oh,
that's a great day.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it helps out so much because I don't always get a big chunk of time to stitch. And if I'm working on something for the magazine I'll take it to charts. That's what we call our group. Thursdays are reserved to stitch. And I can get so much done there. Plus catch up with all the gossip and help other people with their projects.
Yeah, that's fun. And plus that's a nice block of time there that you're not in for an hour and out. You can actually accomplish something.
Yeah, you can do more than just set up, take 10 stitches, and then pack it all up
right.
Again.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the frustrating things at our guild meeting. Is I used to take something to stitch every time, and all I was basically doing was hauling it there and hauling it home. So I don't even bother anymore.
And that's sad, isn't it? Because we're supposed to be doing, we're a needlepoint group, yet we go to these meetings and we don't do needlepoint.
Right. Well, it's just, yeah, for me, I mean, they always, the people who do our programs do a really great job. And so I want to listen to the person who's talking, and I don't always do the projects, because if you did every single project, you'd be so piled up with projects, it'd be ridiculous. But, yeah. You know, so I want to listen to them and learn from them. And then the time is up and it's time to go home, and I never stitched anything. So it's, right. Yeah, they in December, the meeting is always just a stitch in. So then everybody just goes for a couple hours and stitches. And so then I'll actually take something. But, yeah, to have a 5-hour window and with the same group, that's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So are there other men in your ANG group?
No, just me. There have been a couple in the time I've been members. There have been a couple that have showed up. One actually joined, but I never saw him again. So no, it's just me and the women. Which, you know, whatever.
That's,
I mean,
not
they're
bad.
They're great. They're great people. So it's so much fun. And yeah, no, I'm standalone. That's just me. Yep.
We used to have three men in our group, but this is terrible, but several of them have passed away, and one of them is in a care facility now.
Oh.
And we haven't had new men step into our world in a long time, and I wish they would.
Yeah, I don't know how to get that going, because there's the social stigma that gets in the way right out of the gate. And I told a story a couple of weeks ago about I meet my dad lives in Michigan, and he's a model train buff. And there's a group of them who will get on the Amtrak train from Flint, Michigan, and ride to Chicago to have lunch and then ride back, because all they care about is riding on the train. And so they do this twice a year. And, you know, in the spring one, there'll be upwards of 80 people. I mean, it's a big deal. And so then I'll go downtown, because I live out in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and I'll go downtown and meet him for lunch and get a couple hours before they have to get on the train and go back. And the last time, a friend of his was asking me, because Christine and I used to do podcasts about the marine aquarium hobby, and he was asking me about my my podcast. And I said, well, we don't do that anymore. We're doing this podcast called Fiber Talk. And, well, what's that about? And I said, it's about needlepoint and needlework. And my dad looks at me and goes, sewing? Well, yeah, and maybe, yeah, to you, Dad, yeah, sewing. You know, and I could just tell, it's like, what's my oldest son doing talking about sewing, you know? And well, sorry, it's what interests me, so I'm not going to apologize. But there is that, you know, when it comes to men, there is that's a big hurdle to get over, even if they want to do it. And, you know, but if you look back in history, I mean, well, even today, you know,
it was
tailors,
the men.
It was the men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And today,
right.
Tailors.
And
yeah.
The embroiderers, you know, the professional embroiderers were all men. So the women were doing the functional things, and the men were doing the, you know, decorative and the celebrated type of work.
I have a series of articles coming up on men where we're interviewing, you know, each one. They're, men are like the overachievers in the needlepoint world. They do amazing things. And, you know, some of their stories are really inspirational, how needlepoint came into our life. So we've got a series of three articles coming up about men.
Oh, great. I'll look forward to that.
Yeah. And it is interesting because, you know, we know how women get into needlework usually because it's a relative or, you know, friends, or because it's just sort of passed along gender lines. But for a man to sort of hop over the gender line, there must be some precipitating factor, like what made you start, right? It isn't just grandmother sat them down and you know, got them to stitch, you know, or maybe it is. I don't know. That's kind of...
I may have told you this story, but my father-in-law stitched. He was a psychiatrist, and when he was seeing patients, he did needlepoint.
So he, while he was talking to them, he would do needlepoint?
Well, usually they're talking to him, and he felt like if he was working on the needlepoint, it helped him to relax, open up a little more, because they weren't as intimidated by eye-to-eye contact.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
Oh, that's a good technique. Yeah, see, that would have never occurred to me. Yeah, because I could see how, as a patient, you would relax a little bit more. He's kind of only partially paying attention because he's working on this other thing. So,
well, he's really paying attention, but it makes it that instead of a grilling, you know, what's going on in your life and all that, it's more, it somehow relaxes them and it becomes more conversational.
Yeah, right. I guess that's really what I meant.
Staring at you.
Yeah, yeah. He's not leaning over 60-minute style.
Yeah.
That's neat. Yeah. Yeah. No, I wish that there could be more. I mean, it's because it is, I mean, for me, it's just relaxing. It's, you know, I accomplish something. It's relaxing. and it helps me deal with my perfectionist approach to life, and every now and then I can actually get that perfection. And so, I usually have the TV on when I'm doing it, and I mean, it takes about an eighth of your brain to pay attention to what's on TV. So the rest of it can be doing something constructive, and it's, I enjoy it. And I long ago, mm-hmm. for the most part, long ago, got past the, male doing the stitching thing. I still have trouble doing it on an airplane, but,
there's a flight attendant, a male flight attendant that posts on Facebook named Timmy that will post himself stitching on an airplane, like he's in the back or something when he's not having to serve people. And he'll hold up a canvas that he's working on while he's in the air. It's really cute.
Oh, I'll have to look for that.
There you go, Gary.
Yeah.
So you can, don't worry about that. Nobody's looking at you. Just do what you want.
I agree.
Yeah, I really should. Yep. Yeah. That's just something I have to
get over
through.
Yourself.
But, you know, there's a class. Yeah, I travel a lot. I'm sure. Yeah, you do too, Elizabeth. And I'm not one to go out for long dinners and drinks afterwards. I hate that. So when the workday's done, I'll get something to eat, and then I'm in my hotel room. And if I don't have work to do, you know, out comes the needlework sitting in the hotel room, and it really does make the evenings go by a lot faster and make the whole trip a whole lot more tolerable. So it's...
Well, I'm with you on that. I agree. When I can go back to my room and have a couple hours to kind of decompress and stitch, a much more relaxing trip.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah. Yeah, what do you... Then let's talk about that, because now I'm curious. I have a little paddle lap stand and a clip-on light, because there's never enough light in a hotel room. What do you haul when you travel so that you can have the right infrastructure to stitch with?
I have like a little tabletop stand that I can fold up, and it fits in my suitcase really easily. And I usually bring a cheap light, like an IKEA gooseneck light.
Okay. Oh, that's a good idea.
It's pretty lightweight. Doesn't take up much room in the suitcase. I don't do as well with clip-on lights, but I usually get something that has a base and a gooseneck, so I can, you know, move it around and make it shine exactly where I need it.
Yes. All right. Now, see, that helps me, because mine is a clip-on, and I have to say, I think I spend more time adjusting that light and reclipping it than I do actually stitching.
And that's what I found, too.
Yeah.
So, in hotel rooms, you usually, if you don't have a table, you're stuck with sitting in your bed and stitching. And so I just put it on the nightstand and try to pinpoint it the best I can.
You know, it's funny, because I have that exact IKEA gooseneck lamp like 12 feet away from me. Yeah, they're really, and it never occurred to me to use it for that.
Well, if it got ruined, you know, in my suitcase,
it's you wouldn't care.
Yeah, I'll just go get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some, I had a nice Stella, like a clamp-on light, and it got broken in my suitcase. They just crushed it, and that was an expensive light, and it upset me. So I don't take an expensive light with me anymore.
Yeah, that would be upsetting, because those are really nice lights.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It's whatever, if it gets destroyed or stolen, either way, you're not out a lot. Yeah. No, I have, because I have small, I always have small projects that will fit in my computer bag. And so I keep that with me. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Need to get me a proper light then. All right. So you learned something right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It'll cost you $10 at IKEA.
Yeah. Well, that means I'd have to actually go in an IKEA store, though. That's scary.
No, you can order them online.
Okay. Whew. Last time I was in an IKEA store, I didn't think I was going to get out.
In ours, it's like this big maze.
Oh. It is.
And I twisted around. But a bunch of us went in together and bought, I think we bought a dozen of them and just had them shipped here. And we have spares. You break one, go get another.
Okay. All right. There's my solution for the night right there. Well played. Mm-hmm.
That's worth the price of admission.
Mm-hmm.
When you travel to stores, what the successful stores, what do you see in them do? Is it the classes? What makes them successful? I mean, we've had a couple stores close and then have had a couple open here in the last couple of weeks. What do you see? Is there something that stands out with a successful store?
I think they have to have a place for people to come and stitch and make them feel welcome. I mean, we've all walked into stores where we felt like we were bothering the people that worked there.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the stores that I really gravitate to and go to over and over again, they have a big stitching table and you can put your piece down, you can pull threads, you know, you can kind of spread out. If you want to come, most of them have a stitching day or two where you can just come and stitch with people. If you get people in stitching, they're going to buy things. They're going to, you know, oh, I need another card of this, or they're looking at the canvases that are hanging on the walls and the canvases start talking to them. And the next thing you know, they're buying. Yeah, I think that's what makes a store more successful, is that you provide the nurturing environment for your customers.
And that's an interesting point, because it doesn't cost anything for the store other than the real estate of having a table and allowing people to just sit, right? They don't have to do anything.
No, and you know, the next thing you know, somebody's bringing a friend, and you like, they get a regular crowd that comes in on whatever day of the week. And, you know, if they have too many people, then you just do it another day of the week. Your shop is open. You have people in it. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, I saw that at the last time I was in Arizona. I went to the Attic, which is not, there's no needlepoint happening there. It's all samplers and cross-stitch. Well, they have other things, but that's primarily what it was. But I was there on stitching day, which is Thursday. And there were some ladies who'd been there all day long. And
yeah,
that very dynamic was at play. They were camped for the day, and it was their day to go out and sit and stitch and talk. And you know, I would venture that a couple of them did more talking than stitching, but you know, that's good too. I mean, that
sounds great.
Yeah, getting out and interacting and having, you know, getting out of the normal routine. It fits right in with your stitching group there, where it just. What does it cost the store? Yeah, maybe you don't have a couple more racks, you know?
Yeah, you got to get a couple extra chairs, and that's about it. You don't have to provide drinks, lunch, nothing. Just a place for them to gather.
Yeah. Do you see the hobby stronger in one part of the country over another?
No, not really. I see different tastes. The East Coast tends to like more traditional motifs, and the West Coast goes for something that's a little more vibrant and a little more abstract, you know. So, you know, I just see, you know, different likes. And when I go into the shops on the East Coast, I know I'm going to find more traditional pieces. In my mind, they're more traditional. When I come out to, when I go to the California or the Oregon shops, I see things that are a lot more artistic and free flowing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it kind of fits, kind of fits the culture then.
Yeah, but you wonder what drives what, right? So if as an East Coast person, if all the shops around me only have traditional pieces and I don't get the opportunity to see that those abstract pieces are even available, then it's almost a self-fulfilling, you know, it's a positive feedback loop. That's what I see. That's what I know is available. That's what I like. That's what I buy. That's what I do. And then if I don't know that the other thing exists, then I would never think to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even I've heard teachers say, East Coast people won't want to do this kind of piece, you know. It's something that we all talk about.
Yeah.
Between different areas.
That's interesting. Yeah. As a teacher, especially if you're teaching all over the country, you have to angle your presentations and your projects to the right region. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and look at the housing in different areas. You know, the West Coast was not settled as early as the East Coast. Our houses are more modern. We don't have great big mansions or brick homes here. We tend to like more modern art than classical art.
Yeah, interesting, because you don't think about that. You're doing your own hobby, you don't think about it. I mean, now it makes me wonder what it is that we have here in the Midwest. Do we have is it a mix, or is there a style that happens in the Midwest that doesn't happen on either coast?
And what are you stitching now?
What am I stitching now? a cross-stitch stocking for my grandson. If I'm doing needlepoint, it's usually something in the Debbie Rowley range of things. It's usually a Debbie Rowley thing. I just love that. Yeah, I really do like the charted geometrics much more than painted stuff. I have a couple painted canvases I haven't done. I've toyed with them a little bit, but I just really enjoy the geometrics, and I like the complexity. I mean, I like a Debbie Rowley or Curdy Biggs style of.
I do too, and Kathy Reese.
Yes.
And Laura Perrin, they're like my go-to people when I'm wanting to do a charted piece versus a painted piece.
Mm-hmm. So, I tend to do that when it comes to needlepoint. It's really just that's all that interests me. There aren't very many painted canvases I've come across that just scream, buy me and stitch me. But, I don't have any trouble at all finding charted pieces that, I just got to do that one. And I got to do that. Matter of fact, my wife will tell you I don't have any trouble because I have a whole bunch of them sitting there with
your
threads.
Pile of charts.
Yeah, with threads purchased for several of them because I just couldn't resist. And
Ziploc bags full of threads.
Yeah. So, and I, that's, it makes me wonder. I'm curious now with these series of articles, if men tend toward that more.
That's a good question. I have an article on one man who has stitched a lot of the designs that are in Pageant of Patterns by Maggie Lane. And I forget who the other author is. That's bad. But he likes doing charted, just plain needlepoint. He's doing basket weave. So I don't know. That's a good question.
So he does almost exclusively just basket weave, huh?
Yeah, he does. He'll break out. He's doing a couple Christmas stockings, and he'll break out and do some interesting threads and stitches. But he's done a lot of rugs. Mm. That's kind of his what gives him joy, what makes him relax and zone out.
Some more functional pieces as opposed to just plain decorative.
Yeah, and he gives them away as gifts. It's really pretty amazing and ambitious, some of the things he does. I haven't done a rug yet.
You haven't?
So, no. I have one, but I haven't finished. I haven't barely started it.
Solid basket weave. Wool?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do that. That basket weave. That was what when I first started, and I would buy painted kits, and an owl or whatever, and you get the design done, and then now I got a basket weave this entire background. It's just shoot me.
Nobody likes doing it.
And I try and do it as I went along, but even that I hated doing. So I one day I had just a throwaway, and I had these several canvases where the design was done and the basket weave was sitting there waiting to be done. And I don't care. Throw it away.
Yeah. I don't know. I like to do that when I'm like in a waiting room or traveling. Yeah. So, and I, basket weave, we say on 18 count, you can stitch an inch, 1 inch an hour, the average stitcher does. So, you just chip away at it.
Oh, there's my challenge. See, all right, yeah, all right. Now I've got a challenge. Can I do an inch an hour?
An hour,
and have it look decent.
And I like the idea too. Is what you brought up there is a good waiting room project because you don't have to bring all of your threads with you, or all of your, if it's a charted piece, you don't have to bring the chart, and you're not sitting there needing to spread out. You just need the thread that you have for your background, your piece, that's it. You know, it's an easy travel piece.
Yeah, and so say you have to wait a half hour, you've gotten a half an inch done. You haven't gotten bored yet. You haven't had time to get bored, but you'll eventually get the piece done. So I keep a piece in my car that if I have end up waiting for something like my car to be serviced or something, I go pull it out.
There we go. Okay, so all right, so male sitting in an auto dealership. Stitching. Okay, I got to try that.
You can go find a coffee shop.
Because in an auto dealership, I'm supposed to be looking under the hoods of cars and all that.
Yeah.
Reading fishing magazines.
Right.
Because evidently women don't wait in car dealerships because that's all they have is fishing magazines.
I've never seen like Better Homes and Gardens or both.
No.
Yeah. Mm. See, to me, cars are just a necessary evil. I couldn't care less what's under the thing. Just make it run.
Transportation.
They're just a money pit. Just make it run. I don't care.
Yeah. As long as it's reliable.
Yeah. Well, I never have. You know, I never have cared. And I grew up in Flint, Michigan, north of Detroit. I mean, I grew up in the all-time automotive heaven. And I just didn't care. Never have cared. Just make it run. I don't care.
So, yeah.
Talk about it. You last time we talked, you were getting ready to go on a tour through England, and you got a couple of them for next year. Talk about what that's like. What did you experience?
It's fun. I mean, it's like going on vacation with like-minded people. Everybody's excited to do each event every day because you kind of base it around textiles or gardening or books. Or we try to hit the things that needleworkers also love as well as needlework. And we point out the textiles, the tapestries, whatever we come across. And it's just a great way to go on vacation, not by yourself, not dragging your family along, but with, 20 other people that share the joy for textiles that you do. So everybody goes, they're happy. They're really having a good time. I had people say, we usually do the Royal School of Needlework early in the trip. And I had people say, oh, this is going to be the highlight of my trip. But then we go do the next thing and they go, oh, this is the highlight of my trip. And every day it's a highlight. And they'll say, I thought the Royal School was going to be my favorite thing, but I can't pick what my favorite thing is. and that's really the sign of a very successful tour. So, and we've been really lucky. Everybody's gotten along on our tours. We haven't had any, needy people or, high maintenance people. So it's been a good thing. So next year we're going to do two tours of England. One of them is going to hit, we call it the Wild West because it's going to hit Cornwall.
And we're going to, nice.
Yeah, we're going to try to go see like where Doc Martin was filmed. And
yes, we just talked about that.
Yeah.
Fort Isaac.
We're going to go see Stonehenge. And, we just have every day there's something exciting that we're going to get to go see. I love to travel. I love to see new things. So this has worked out really well for me. It also gives me articles for the magazine for those who didn't come with us. And then, so that tour is in April 15th through the 26th. And then in October, we're going to go to the northern part of England. We're going to go see Yorkshire, and we'll try to do the Royal School of Needlework like we always do. And let me see if I can pull up real quick what the itinerary is.
Is it we all fly to Heathrow and then get on a bus? Is it buses or how do you travel around?
We should start off in right outside of London, across from Hampton Court. And everybody is coming from all over the place. So we have a driver waiting for you and they take you to the hotel. You get checked in. Some people come in a couple days early so they can adjust to their jet lag, and we're happy to make arrangements for them to do that. And then we start off with like a meet and greet where everybody tells where they're from, and we talk about what they like, what they don't like, and it gets the group starting to interact with each other. And then we usually go over to Hampton Court and get a tour of the Royal School of Needlework by their director, Susan K. Williams, and then we'll take a class. And it depends on which tour. Sometimes we do a one-day class. We may do a half-day. We've done two-day classes with the Royal School. They have a theme every year. Like last year, it was stump work. So we did stump work techniques. The year before that, it was gold work in pomegranates and peacocks. So we did a gold pomegranate. So I'm not sure what next year's theme is yet, but we'll probably go along with their theme so we don't get redundant and do the same thing every year.
Right. That sounds like fun. Christine, I'm asking these questions for you because I know you're itching to get over
there.
I know.
I was thinking about doing something similar on my own eventually. So, yeah, and doing pretty much exactly that, doing a little bit of doing Hampton Court and then doing Cornwall and a little bit of time in London, and then probably Stratford would be where I would go. But, yeah, pretty much the same thing. But the idea of being able to do it with a group of people that are all excited about the same things that you are, as opposed to, you know, maybe a family that is not as excited as you are.
I can drag my husband to maybe one every 3 years. You know, he's got his own thing too.
Right. Exactly. So the idea of going places where you don't feel like the people with you are just waiting for you to finish.
Right.
You know, how nice is that?
While you go in there and shop, you know, that drives me crazy because I always
rushed. Even if they don't care, as long as you take as long as you want, but you always feel a little guilty.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. But on the flip side, when you tell them to go take their time, you have your needlework in your car. So you really mean go take your time.
Yeah, I don't care how long you take. Do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. I'm enjoying my little quiet time here.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem just sitting in my car and doing some stitching while.
Yep.
Has a meeting or something. It doesn't bother me at all.
What's a day like on these trips? I mean, you have the meals set up. Is there time built in for people just to sit around and stitch? Because see, one of the things that turns me off about those kinds of trips is I just envision I'm getting up, getting on the bus, and we're just pounding from location to location till dinner time, and to me that's just not relaxing. So And that's just my own personal thing.
I've been on that tour where you were cramming too much in every day and you didn't have the ability to savor it and enjoy it. And so the whole tour becomes a big blur.
Yes.
And you can't really remember the details of what you saw. What we try to do is have two activities a day. So we get up, we have breakfast at the hotel, and then we get on our tour bus and we go do activity one, like trying to pull up an itinerary. Like if we decide to go to Hampton Court in the morning and listen to Susan K. Williams give a lecture on their collections, do that in the morning. Then in the afternoon, we might get on and we walk over to Hampton Court. The hotel we stay in is directly across the street. In the afternoon, we might get on our motor coach and go into town and go to the Victoria and Albert Museum. Or we might go to the Liberty of London and do some shopping. You know, but we usually try to have a morning activity and an afternoon activity, and then we have dinner. So breakfast is usually at the hotel. Lunch, we will... sometimes we pick up lunch. Sometimes we'll say, we're in a museum. When you're ready, go to the coffee shop and get something to eat. Dinner's always included. Sometimes it's at a hotel. There's some restaurants that we really like in London and all that we'll go there. There's one that's, it's called Meze, and it's a Lebanese restaurant. It's very, very good. So we always, I always make us go there. So, and then, you know, we have time for happy hour. You have stitching time. We take, some days we'll say, you know, we're going to stitch this afternoon. That's our activity. Let's all meet in the library and we're all going to stitch.
Oh, okay. So you get some of that in because that's, you know, that, you know, the perfect vacation to me is to go get a cabin in the North Woods and be there for a week and not see anybody, you know, just read and take a nap. And, you know, that's.
Yeah. Bring my needlepoint, bring my books. I love to read and my dogs and I'm happy. So we try to incorporate a little bit of that too, where we just have some downtime to stitch. We usually offer 2 to 3 projects on that are like postcards to remind you of your trip. And we try to include some new techniques. So you'll get like a Royal School project. We'll do a needlepoint project. We have a lady that does more linen work that usually comes up with something special just for us. On Wild West, we have a famous felter. So we're going to felt either a scarf or a hat. And I've never done that kind of felting, so I'm looking forward to that.
So you're not just getting pounded with needlepoint either. It sounds like there's a good variety of needlework type things.
Yeah, we try to give you little tastes of different things. So it's not such a big commitment that if you don't like it, you feel like you've wasted your time. It's usually just, you know, a new technique that you can try. Most people like the projects we come up with. I'm probably the only one that hasn't finished everything that I've done on the tour.
Yeah, that's all right.
And I like the domestic tour that you have as well, the Oregon tour.
With Laura Taylor, I'm doing that one. We're starting in Seattle, and we call it what did we call it? God, my brain is like mush. It's the Rolling Stitch Party and Shop Crawl. So we're doing 6 needlepoint shops, at least 1 beading shop. We got 2 wineries, a couple other little regional shops that we're going to do along the way where you can, like in California, going and getting a tour of an olive oil place and buying different kinds of olive oil. We're going to see a Shakespeare play. We're going to see Othello. And, you know, it's just kind of like a taste of the whole Pacific coast. Mm-hmm. And each of the shops are having like a little function for us, whether it's a wine and cheese or, you know, just a, they might have a little goodie bag for us. There's going to be a trunk show at every shop. It's like, save your money because you're going to be spending some.
So this starts in Seattle and was end up in San Francisco, or how far do you go south? Do you go?
We go all the way to San Diego.
Oh, there we go.
There they are.
How many dogs do you hear? He's gotten them calmed down pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't near as much fun as I expected.
I think he threw him out the door. He, you know, come on, you hungry? And they all just follow him.
No. So Seattle to San Diego, holy smokes, that's a distance.
It's going to be 10 days. We're going to stop and have a barbecue at Needlepoint Now. You know, and Laura Taylor is going to have us at her house for a dinner. You know, it's just going to be a real mix of experiences. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to that one, too. It should be a lot of fun.
It sounds like a ton of fun.
We have 16 people signed up so far, and I could take probably, I can take up to probably 22.
Act quick, then.
Yeah. Yep. They're just talking about needing to win the lottery, so here's another reason.
Yeah, we talk about saving our $5 bills whenever you get a $5. Tuck it in an envelope.
Oh, that's the trick? Okay. All right.
Yeah. I'm beginning to think I got to start saving my $20 bills.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good trick. $5 bills.
Yeah, it adds up pretty quick.
20s would. That'd be faster, though. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Depends on how big of a trip you want to take.
Where was I reading this? Here, I actually wrote it down. A Stitch in Time, there was a article about the health benefits of needlepoint. And I thought it was interesting that some people call it the new yoga.
I saw that. I think that's great. Mm. I mean, when you stitch, don't you kind of let your mind relax?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it is yoga for your brain.
I believe it. My job is very, I'm sure everybody says this, my job is very stressful. It's just a very fast-paced, intense kind of thing. So, and then I have a very long commute, which can be relaxing or can be also stressful because there's tons of traffic. And I find now, especially, that I'm just itching to get home and get on the couch. And it's not about the couch. It's about stitching and just letting the day disappear, because the whole day just does exactly that. It disappears instead of sort of, you know, mulling over all the things that happened and the things you need to do. It breaks you out of that cycle, you know? Yeah. So it's tremendously valuable that way.
Yeah. I mean, you know how things fall through the cracks because you just get too busy. Sometimes when I'm stitching, I dredge out these things. Oh, shoot, I forgot to email so-and-so, or, you know, I got to write myself a note that I need to look over a file tomorrow. You know, it kind of helps me organize my thoughts in my brain. Mm-hmm.
Since we started this podcast, Christine, and you got started getting into stitching, I've just noticed that too. It's really been a benefit for you because your job is pretty high strung. And, I've just noticed that just in the talking that we do, that having that stitching to do is giving you that diversion that really helps you.
Yeah. It just makes everything else go away because I have something enjoyable to do. So for me, and I'm sure many people are like this, I have a hard time letting go of things. You know, if you have something that is weighing on you or needs to be done, or, you know, the sort of logistically you have to figure this out, I would come home and I couldn't let it go, and it would just go round and round and round in my head. And now I completely let it go because I have something fun to do, you know? So it allows me to dissociate and divorce myself from the day job and then come home and do something completely different.
It's your reward.
Yeah. It is a reward. Yes, it very much is a reward. It's something to look forward to every day. And you know, I joke that it's the thing that allows me to watch TV guiltlessly, because otherwise I sit here and watch TV and think, you know, it's like Gary was saying before, you know, I should be doing something else, or, you know, something productive. And I feel like I'm doing something productive and I can catch up on a show and just do something that's just relaxing and just that. Because you're making something. You have something to show for the time at the end of it, right?
Yeah. So work so hard, you know.
Yeah.
So hard. And we forget that we have to factor in some downtime.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Definitely. And for me, too, my job involves a ton of people. So I was just even saying today, at the end of the day, you know, and Gary, being a former teacher, I'm sure you can appreciate this. You get to the end of some days where I haven't been able to sit down at my desk and do my own work because I've spent the whole day talking to people or having people talk at me or talking around me. And I just want some time where nobody's talking, you know,
right.
And that's your needlework time, is that it's quiet and there's no words flying around the room. And you know, there isn't this intensity of seven people in front of you. It's alone time, which is, for me, is it's a necessary thing, you know?
It's priceless. Mm-hmm. And it's how we recharge. I mean,
yes.
I can get through the next day much easier if I had some time like that.
Definitely. I think it allows us to rationalize our introversion.
Yeah,
that's what it is. I'm not an introvert. I'm doing something. So
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, I think all of us have a little bit of an introvert in us. You know, some people charge batteries by being around other people. I don't happen to be like that. I recharge my batteries by being at home and having my needlework, or my gardening and my dogs and, you know, all the things I love around me, I like a very quiet life, and that's how I recharge my batteries.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way, and I definitely find if I don't have that, if I spend too much time, you know, with other people, and it's not, it makes me sound like a very asocial person. It's just I need some time alone, you know, to build back, exactly like you said, to recharge. So
yeah, I'm not asocial either, but I have to have my downtime if I want to keep up being a social person.
Yes, that's a very good way of saying it.
Yeah, that's one thing that Marga, who will talk, she's verbal, and I'm not, and which is so weird so weird that we're doing these podcasts, but you know, that was one of the things early on 40 years ago that she had to learn, was that I literally can go hours and never say a word, and I'm just fine with that.
I am the exact same way. And I told my husband, we had been married, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years, and I said, living with you is almost as good as living by myself. And I mean that in a positive way.
Yes, yes.
He let me be quiet and not engage me in conversation 24/7.
There, see, I treasure that. Yep. Just silence, hours of it. I'll take it.
Yeah. Don't you think that needle pointers are like that, though?
I think a lot are, yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many needle pointers will tell you flat out that they're solitary stitchers? And they're happy with that. Just
a lot.
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot who have to be with someone to stitch, but I would say the majority are just quite happy just being by themselves with their projects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weird how that happens. Yep.
Yeah, it is. But I do feel like, you know, needle workers are my tribe. I understand them. We feel the same things. I don't have to explain myself to other stitchers because they get it.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And that goes back to the beginning of the conversation where we're talking about, you know, high school kids doing needlework. It's about finding their tribe. So we're really doing exactly the same thing. We're finding people who feel the same way or are excited about the same things that we are, and just finding our place in life just the same way that they do in high school.
Yeah. I mean, some people find it through their church. Some people find it through sports. You know, we just happen to find it through needlework.
Okay, we're running out of time, and the magazine editor in me has got to know what's coming up for Needlepoint now. You got a series on men who stitch. What other things you got lined up for next year?
Well, next year we've got a lady that did a chair. I've always wanted to do a chair, but I haven't. We've got some new designers out there. One of them is called Little Bird, and she has a project. This will be in the March, April. She has a project that will make everybody feel good. It's got a story, and I'll bring that. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I've got a Strictly Christmas triptych coming up that is amazing. It has a stitch guide by Patricia Sohn, and I just got all the pieces and parts in for it, and I've decided that I have to stitch it. And I don't have to stitch everything that's in the magazine, but this is one that I have to stitch. So that'll be fun.
That's coming out early enough to have it done for Christmas.
It involves three canvases, but it's not gigantic. It would be equivalent to stitching probably a Christmas stocking. So you probably aren't going to get it done for this Christmas, but you might get it for next. And we started in May, June, and I think I'm going to cover it over three issues because of the size and the complexity of the pieces. So that's my real coup for the next year. I just love this piece. So, and it's a nativity scene, and you know, I know that not everybody celebrates Christmas, but we work hard on addressing all different religions. So hopefully it'll get enough wow that people want to do it.
You got me interested right now, I can tell you that. Yep. Cause I've been looking for some kind of a nativity thing, and there are several pieces that people have where you stitch the different things and make them different figures and make them stand-ups, but they I can't get excited about. I haven't seen any I could get excited about. And
I have one that I've been working on for years that got me excited. I don't want, you know, I appreciate that there's a cowboy nativity and there's a chicken nativity and there's all these other nativities, but I needed one that spoke to me to be able to give it that much time to get it done. So this one is special. It's beautifully done, well designed, and Bijou Bijou did a special frame for it, a triptych frame. It's not so big. It'll sit on your mantle or it'll sit under your tree, and it's just going to be a showstopper.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Look forward to that. Yes. What else you got on tap? You got three tours.
I got three tours, six magazines. I'm going to teach at Winitar for the Art Needlepoint Company in March. The Art Needlepoint Company has teamed up with Winitar to have some needlework classes while they have their big needlework exhibit.
Oh.
And they asked me if I would teach a piece. So I'm going to go there. And I heard from the owner of Art Needlepoint, and she said, your class is almost full, which makes me a little nervous. But
yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, so that'll be good. You know, anything I can do to get Needlepoint in other people's hands, I'm all in.
Hey, if you're going to teach a class and a lot of people show up, to me, that's always much better than two people. So
yeah.
Care. You know, I wouldn't even care. I always feel like I'm looking for converts, you know, here be, and I will teach you needlepoint and it will become your life. And,
you know. It's the evangelism.
Yeah, definitely. So I have some preachers in my family, so I guess that's where it came from.
Yep.
But, and I also want to get involved. I've been talking to a number of people trying to get more children involved in needlework. I have a great niece that is very young, and her mom, my sister, stitches. And she said, I want to stitch like you. So, you know, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Let me find something for you. So I want to work on a good formula for teaching little kids.
Yeah, that would be gold if something like that were put in place that could help schools. Yeah, yeah, whatever. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
After school programs, a lot of those. Yeah, that'd be fun to do to have.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah, I just think we have to, you know, get them while they're young and they're interested. They might put it away for a long time, but you've given them a taste, and they may come back to it.
Yeah, it's that. Just plant the seed, and then sooner or later, if it's legit, it'll show up somewhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's how it happened with me. I started with brownies. They were teaching us some basic embroidery stitches, and then in Girl Scouts, we got a little more. My grandmothers worked with me. My mom worked with me, and you know, I didn't do it when I was in middle school. But when I got into probably junior high, I started stitching again because that's when I started getting stressed about, you know, being in school, being a teenager. And even at that young age, I knew that this was a way to calm myself down.
Yep. And there you have it. Still today. Yeah.
Yep.
It works. It really does work. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Elizabeth, we got to wrap this up. Once again, thanks. Enjoyed having you back. And
yeah. Anytime. It's always nice talking to you both.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so exciting about the tours. I can't wait to hear how those go. We'll have to talk afterwards.
Yeah, put your $5 away. And
yes.
It can be done. It can be done. All right, yep. That's it. Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.
Take care.